ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
The Hagmann and Hagmann Report. This day, folks, this broadcast is going to be something, well, it's going to be perhaps one of the most important broadcasts we've ever done, and I don't say that lightly. Welcome to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report, listeners in North America, in the United States, all around the world. This is a clarion call. You want to know about Syria?
The front lines.
You want to know what's going on in Syria? You want to know what you, as Christians, can do to ensure, to help other Christians. You want to understand the genocide that's taking place in Syria. You want to understand what's taking place. There's one person that we have on, along with his partners. He's the head of the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement. Folks, you're going to want to go there right now. Open up a new browser, a new tab. Go to NEC. That's NEC, which stands for Near East Center, dash SE, which stands for Strategic Engagement, .com. That's NEC dash SE .com.
It's definitely worth a read. If you go to the about or by and or biography section, you can read about Lieutenant Colonel who will be on tonight. Lieutenant Colonel
Sargis Sangari.
Sangari.
Yeah, folks.
He's got an extensive bio.
He does.
He's very qualified and has been doing this for a long time, for decades now.
He's a retired U.S. Lieutenant Colonel from the U.S. military. I'm not going to read you his bio. You can go there and look at his bio. He's got nothing to prove. He's done it all in terms of military battle. But what we're facing here is, folks, is nothing short of Christian genocide. Do you understand? And I did not get the scope of this. I'm a big picture guy. We're all big picture people here, and we did not understand the scope of this. Do you understand that the Islamic State, ISIS, their bigger picture here. The bigger picture is to prove the Bible wrong, is to prove the prophets of the Bible wrong, is to exterminate the Christians in the Middle East, the Assyrian Christians. Folks, I beg of you, contact anyone you can to listen to this program. Contact everybody you can to listen to this program. Listen to this program, download it, spread it on Facebook, on all the social networking sites, because I can guarantee you right now, of all the places and people who are listening, is the United States State Department. Welcome to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. This to Foggy Bottom, the U.S. Department of State. Welcome, and listen and learn. The respect and admiration I've got for the guests, multiple guests we have on tonight, I cannot understate. Again, retired Lieutenant Colonel Sargis Sangari. He is changing. Well, he's one man, one institute, the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement, that is standing between the agenda of genocide of ISIS and the survival of the nation. The Assyrian nation and the survival of Christians in the Middle East.
And I want to give you credit that Syria is a topic, an issue that is something that has been the one of your main focuses for the last 4 or 5 years, even before the attempted coup of Assad.
Well, you know,
countless articles and from inside information that you've received from sources to your own geopolitical analysis, you've been harping on Syria, the Christian genocide in Syria, and the political realignment in Syria and have pointed out that it will lead to World War III.
Right. But this goes well beyond anything I've ever imagined. Folks, if you thought for a second that my writings at CanadaFreePress.com or at HagmanReport.com, if you thought those writings were good, I did not understand the full scope of what is taking place in Syria, in Iraq, in Iran, with the Kurds, with the Assyrian Christians, with all of this until I virtually met Lieutenant Sergeant Sangari. Let me tell you something. He's on with us, along with two other individuals that I will let him introduce before we get to him. Just please, I'm kind of dragging this out a little bit because I want as many people right now who are listening to stop what you're doing and pay very close attention. Again, this is perhaps one of the most important programs we've ever done, because when you understand what is taking place here, you will understand the defects of our diplomacy, of our policy. And maybe not defects, but deliberate tanking. I don't know. You've got, in my view, you've got a Muslim, or at the very least, a Muslim sympathizer in the White House. You've got a leadership structure, command and control. I was listening to many interviews that Lieutenant Sergeant Sangari had done in various venues today. And to hear the broken leadership, the ignorance, or deliberate machinations of the nefarious. I don't know. And Lieutenant Sergeant Sangari is going to tell us as in addition to his guests that he has with him. But folks, please, again, carefully listen to what he's got to say. And don't just listen, but here's our chance as Christians to stand in the gap with this man, these men, to help these victims of this Muslim genocide, of the genocide that's taking place. I cannot tell you, after hours upon hours upon hours of research and reading what I read and listening to what I heard, I cannot tell you how important this is. If you do nothing else, if you don't listen to any other show ever again, this is the one. This is the one. Because at the epicenter of what's taking place is what's going on in the Middle East. Now, before we bring our guests on, and I know they've been patiently waiting. Again, we've got a retired Lieutenant Colonel Sergeant Sangari. This man has combat missions, medals, accommodations, survivor of IEDs. He's been on the front lines for American forces. He's Iranian born. I mean, he's got, his resume would fill a small novella. And I'm sure his personal experience would fill an even bigger one.
His education is extensive. He has a bachelor in political science.
Yes.
From the University of Chicago, Illinois. Or I'm sorry, from DePaul University in the Chicago of Illinois.
I mean, look, you know what? I'll tell you what, Joe. Rather than
yeah, let's bring him on.
Let's bring him on and the other guests, which I'm going to let fine man introduce. Are you ready, folks? Saddle for battle. By the way, this broadcast brought to you in part by Minuteman Stove, okay? What a great segue, because Minuteman Stove is, this stove has been used in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's battle proven, battle ready. More on that later. But without further ado, Lieutenant Colonel Sergeant Sangari. Sir, welcome to the Hagman Report.
Thank you for having me, guys. How are you?
Man, fantastic. You've got other guests as well that are joining you as well, or have joined you as well. Would you like to introduce them now, sir?
Yes, I actually have the commander of the Syrian army with me. He's here in the States visiting currently. This is the second time that he has been back here trying to muster support for the Syrian army, which is fighting against ISIS downrange. Just for you all information, what happened was that ISIS actually declared war against the Syrian army in November of last year before they attacked France at the same time that they declared war against France. So the Syrian army establishes forward line of troops going back to August 11th of 2014 in what we call the Syrian Nimbus Plain. For your guests who may not be aware of it, northern Iraq, where the city-state of Nineveh exists, where the city of Mosul is, where the second largest city in Iraq exists currently, and where they're planning on conducting the operations for the clearing of Mosul, right in that plain area is actually where the Syrian Nineveh Plain is, and that's where the forward line of troops had been established by a small Christian contingency force that initially went forward as the Sunni Muslim Kurds and also the Shia were leaving the battlefield and met head-on ISIS main elements that were running off of a highway number 2. So they've established that forward line of troops, and they've held it for 2 years now. I'll let the commander talk a little bit more about that anniversary, but since then, they're the only element that has been able to hold its ground without any support unilaterally, and has been able to defeat ISIS multiple counterattacks. Two other young men that are going to speak to you, both of them have served with the Syrian military forces. One is currently back in the States, Matthew, and another young man named Lewis is currently downrange as we speak. So you're going to get a battlefield perspective. You're going to get an understanding of what type of operations they had done from the guys on the ground. And the commander will talk to you in detail as to why the force was established.
Thank you. Okay. Commander, welcome to the Hagman Hagman Report.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. Now, Commander, can you give us your name, or is that...
Actually, my name is Emmanuel Koshaba.
Okay.
And I born in the city of Kirkuk, graduated from Baghdad, and I joined the opposition of Iraqi opposition against the Saddam regime. Since the 80s, and until now, I'm in working in a politician. When Daesh occupied our land, our territory in Nineveh Plain, I called for establish the Dwekhnosha army, a Syrian army. Dwekhnosha is Aramic language. It means the sacrificers. And we established that we picked the arms to fight against those terrorists who occupied our land, who let our people, our Assyrian Christian people, flee from their area, and to give a message to different countries and to our neighbors that the Christian people, they are not weak, or if they have support, they can fight for their land. So this is was what was our message to Kurdish, to Arab, to U.S. government or coalition force, to everyone. But since that happened in the 11th of August 2014, but what happened until now that we didn't see any support unless from our people or our friends that who believe in our case. They are individuals. They support us. One organization, stand with us. It's United Assyrian Appeal, UAA. The support they give us, that was support to our families, that we can fight if our families at least live in dignity and live with a minimum conditions of the life.
and deservedly so. You're making a great sacrifice for all of the Christians in the area, Commander, and people have to understand that. Thank you for all that you're doing.
Thank you.
Commander, or Lieutenant Colonel Sangari, they're under tough conditions, aren't they, right now?
They're under tough conditions. They have been since they started. To be honest, initially when the fighting began and Commander Emmanuel Khoshaba came to the States, he came and met with me with his team. Looking at what they had disposition-wise, I told them there's no way. Tactically, you're not going to be able to sustain on the battlefield. Operationally, you're just not going to have the support. That means strategically, you're null and void. As much as that might have been a really tough message to send to the Christians that were currently fighting and dying on the ground, the reality was that U.S. had already made decisions as to who they might be supporting in the longer duration, which would be supporting the still the Kurdish regional government with the Sunni Muslim Kurds, or the Baghdad government, which is Shia government tied to Iran with Iran influence. So in that capacity, they said, just give us a chance, give us an opportunity. I will tell you that this force has done absolute miracles. And frankly, they have done what we would call in Army terms, what is a tier one, tier two level operation. This is what your special operators do at a very high level. They conducted these operations in both Syria and in Iraq. The support did not come to them initially, because when the commander came here in February of this past year, one thing we realized was that from a serviceman perspective who served downrange before, that U.S. was not going to support any other group in the region and was already exhausted with its monetary and basically personnel support for the current actors in the region who couldn't stand their ground in the fight. So one of the things we talked about with the commander when we looked at what we need to do is that we needed to conduct unilateral operation, show our capabilities, do it on our own, and then go to the State Department and Department of Defense. So all the operations that we did, only certain segments of the Department of Defense at CENTCOM and other groups were aware of. We did those by ourselves. So when we actually showed up in February of this year, it was no longer like everybody else going up to the State Department or the Department of Defense saying, give us money, give us support, and we can show you what we could do. We actually literally did it on the battlefield. And when we did it on the battlefield, we went up and we put the paperwork in front of the Department of Defense, Department of State, in this case the Bureau of Near East Affairs, both the Iraqi and Syria desk lead, and said, look, this is what we've done. If you want to see an enduring partner, you need to stop just wasting money and effort and talent and sacrificing our young men and women for people who just don't care about you. And they will never care about you, regardless of how much money you sink into their pockets. They are just not prone culturally to accept your viewpoints of how the world should be. I will tell you that the Department of Defense, in this case, Office of Strategic Defense, when we briefed them, they were shocked. They were shocked what a small Assyrian Christian force was able to do, spending money out of their own pockets to fight and kill ISIS operators within both Syria and Iraq. At the same time, the Department of State was shocked and surprised. However, with that said, they had already made decisions on how to cut up the piece of the pie for what they want to see a future, quote-unquote, federalized Iraq looks like. So for Christian Assyrians today, the main thing that we were told when we were up at the Department of State and Department of Defense was that you will have to go register on the Minister of Defense for you to receive any training or support from U.S. forces, regardless of the fact that the type of operations we did literally led to a lot of high-value targets being removed off the battlefield, both in Syria and Iraq. And the reason for that is because the decision-makers and policymakers and congressmen who have already made up their decisions in the election year had stated that we're going to stick with our current array of allies, which is either the Kurdish, Muslim Sunni Kurds up in the north, and then we will have the Shia government in Baghdad. Well, for us to have done that, if we had taken that lead, that means we would have registered on the Ministry of Defense, and then we would have to take money from Al-Hashir Shaabi. Al-Hashir Shaabi, if you want to really know the details, and I'll let the commander explain more of about who they are. These are individuals and characters who literally killed American forces on the ground when I was on the ground fighting against Al-Qaeda at that time and trying to unify Iraq. For a State Department to say to Christian Assyrians, your only two options are to go be under the Sunni Muslim Kurds who are looking at taking those territories that are Assyrian lands for themselves because they want it for their own region or country, and to say for the Assyrian Christians that you have to go be under the Shia that are the same Shia that were part of the Hashir Shaabi, specifically in Baghdad, during a genocide where the root of Christianity is being eradicated, was absolutely not an issue that we were interested in. And we were not going to do it because it wasn't going to serve us to keep the root of Christianity alive in the Middle East in order to replace us by others to give them access to oil in the lands that the Christians control and have held and is part of a historical homeland, was absolutely a non-starter. So where we are right now with the Assyrian Army is a very capable force. It wants to be an enduring partner, but we are not going to subjugate ourselves under either the Sunni Muslim Kurds of Iraq or under the Shia of the Middle East in the government Iraq structure, which is currently heavily influenced by Iran and is heavily influenced by the same characters who are killing U.S. forces downrange.
So what you're saying, what I hear you saying, Commander, Lieutenant Colonel, is that we don't, the United States has a broken, somewhat schizophrenic policy, I suppose, when it comes to the Christians in Syria, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, the Middle East in its entirety, the Near East, Middle East.
Yeah, and I don't believe that they've made, that these are mistakes made by the administration, you know, funding these different groups, which went and in turn started killing American soldiers and other people that were fighting ISIS.
No, I don't know either. Folks, if you're just joining us, we are talking with three individuals who are the most capable to explain the plight of the Christians in the Middle East and the Near East. Our primary guest is Lieutenant Colonel Sargas Sangari. The website that we will direct you to is in the show description. However, it's NEC for Near East Center -SE for Strategic Engagement .SE .com. All right, so that's where you need to go. And what we're going, or what we're discussing, or what these gentlemen are talking about here, we've got about a minute before the bottom of the hour break here. I just want to kind of reaffirm this. We have, about 2 minutes, I'm sorry. But we have brave gentlemen here who are, Lieutenant Colonel, would you classify yourself in the Assyrian Christian Army as, and this is a question, if you can just answer in you know, 60 seconds or so, is what you're doing, is this a stopgap that basically no one else is doing or even capable of via the Assyrian Christian Army?
Nobody else is doing. Do others have capability? If they have, the problem is the leadership has been advised by the State Department to either subjugate yourself to the Shia of Iraq or subjugate yourself to the Sunni Kurds of Iraq, and they have taken those steps. This is the only force that is an independent force that has said, no, we're not going to do that. So we expect you to come to the table as equal partners, work with us, so we could not just be a partner to the United States. We could alleviate the burden off of America. Frankly, I will tell you right now, guys, downrange, every individual we've sunk money into has failed. This group hasn't even asked for money. We've said, give us the training and support so we could take the fight to them. In this case, when we're successful, you could turn around and say, you know, it wasn't the American soldiers training you that failed in their mission. It wasn't the Department of Defense or maybe even the Department of State that failed in its efforts to try to get you moving in the right direction to become a possible functional democracy. You're the goat in the road. It wasn't us. And we're ready, capable, able to do that. It's just a matter of whether or not the Department of Defense, under the guidance from Congress and the leadership of this country, are willing to take those steps.
Lieutenant Colonel, thank you. Lieutenant Colonel, our special guest tonight is Lieutenant Colonel Sargis Sangari. Of course, his website is the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement. That's NEC-SE.com.
Bookmark that site, folks, and check out all the extensive resources that are on that site.
You want to know what's going on in Syria? You want to know why things are taking place in Syria? You want to know why we are failing miserably, we as a Christian community, and even in the United States? Well,
our foreign policy.
That's our foreign
who's
policy,
on whose
right.
side?
But yeah. Here's a guy. Here's a guy with a website, and here's a guy with an initiative and his associates who are making a difference. We're going to be right back. Stay right there with us. Don't move. Tell a friend about this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Hagman and Hagman Report. Hagman and Hagman.com, HagmanReport.com. Two websites, two different agendas. Number one, the Hagman and Hagman.com, that's our show website. Our two functions, not agendas. HagmanReport.com is for news information and analysis. This is certainly going to be hitting the news segment. Our very special guests tonight include Lieutenant Colonel Sargis Sangari. If you detect any urgency in my voice, it's there, because what we're talking about tonight, in my view, in our view collectively, is perhaps one of the most important topics that we could discuss as Christians, as Americans, as patriots, as lovers of freedom, and even more so, as friends of these gentlemen who are risking their lives, who have risked their lives, and are trying to save the Christians from genocide.
Right,
and
friends
so.
And brothers from right. all over the Middle East and these oppressed areas of the world where some of our foreign policy and other dictators, thirst for hunger have led to these atrocities being committed to the point where nobody is stepping up and protecting the minority, Christians. And instead, we're seeing the opposite take place. We're seeing Christians executed. We're seeing them being forced to submit or convert or pay a tax. We've had millions flee the Middle East in fear of death. And this is a humanitarian crisis of the highest degree.
Well, it's one that's orchestrated by policy, and it's one that's orchestrated by policy. I'll just leave it at that. Thank you so much for your gift of time, Lieutenant Colonel Sargis Sangari, as well as the commander who's downrange. And I can't imagine what sacrifices you all have made and are making for the Christians out there, for the Jews, for the oppressed, as Joe said. I just want to say thank you. Now, Lieutenant Colonel, I'm going to kind of let you direct things, but I want to ask a basic question for those people out there listening. Maybe they're listening. We've got listeners in the UK right now. We've got listeners all over the United States, North America, and other continents as well. But can you give us a kind of a, and I don't want to go where, I don't want to waste your time, because your time is valuable, but can you kind of give us a kind of a thumbnail sketch of really what is taking place for those people who really don't understand the general overview of Syria and how it fits into Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, all of this stuff, you know, the fight that's there and how America fits into all of this and how really the bigger picture ISIS attempting to disprove to disprove Bible prophecy. Sir?
Well, Syria in itself was just absolutely a dysfunctional foreign policy to begin with. I think the decisions that were made with what happened with the Arab Spring, whether it was in Libya, which led to weapons being moved to Syria, or us backing the Muslim Brotherhood at the same time that everybody in Egypt was rejecting it, and the military having to step in and remove that terrorist element out of their midst, and the links of the Muslim Brotherhood to Turkey and Erdogan himself, who was trying to establish an Islamic State. All these factors came into being where United States, under the current administration, saw itself losing control. And it saw itself losing control because the narrative that initially had about how you could work with certain segments of Islam and you can't work with others started unraveling on itself. It started basically finding what it considered to be allies that might be moderate. I will tell you right now, from the experience of Assyrians that have fought downrange against Islamic radicals, and I'll let the commander explain a little bit more about that because you get to hear from him more than from me. The reality is this, that there's a transitional process that an Islamic radical goes through. He initially is raised in the culture. He tries to affect the surrounding political beliefs through a political process. So he may join a political group. He will join religious groups to try to affect it. And at the end, it goes from an educational to a political to a religious or however else you want to fit it into that scheme. But the pattern is the same. At the end, we have not had one radical element leader who has not tried to initially enforce his vision on what Islam should be and how Islam should make itself viable in the Middle East without going through those steps. So the problem falls where you have an administration that has been told by these intellectual thinkers that, well, if you work with the political Muslims, then you'll be able to achieve what you're trying to achieve given your vision in the region. Not understanding that at any given time, the person you're working with can flip easily from one side to the other as far as the narrative is concerned. You know, when I was with the U.S. military, and I was at the Special Warfare Center in school as we worked on doctrine, one of the key questions I always asked was, can somebody explain to me how come we have unconventional forces basically in irregular warfare, but we don't have irregular troops in irregular warfare? It became an issue of doctrine. The reality is, as we play around with wording of whether somebody is like Al-Qaeda or call Al-Qaeda, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if the guy puts a round in your chest, where they fall in, or where you try to place them. Given the fact that we have administration that tries to rationalize what is happening within the region itself is falling apart. Two things that have to be a must for foreign policy if you want to be able to operate and control the Middle East are very simple. One, your enemies have to be treated with violence. They have to be wiped out. If he's your enemy, you kill him. And if he's your friend, you take care of your friends. If you take care of your friends and you stand by your friends, you'll be surprised how fast your enemies will be reduced in numbers. That's just the reality of how that region operates. We haven't understood that. What happened as the region started falling apart in 2014, the current administration said, you know what, I don't want to take all the blame as Libya's falling apart, as Syria's falling apart, as the other regions are falling apart, as Iraq's about to fall apart. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to limit my footprint, and then I'm going to invite all these other characters in to this structure, whether it be expanding Iran's footprint in the region, allowing Russia to come into Syria, allowing Turkey to have a say in northern Syria and northern Iraq. This way, I can say, well, you know, it's not really my fault. Everybody else has a piece in this blame game also. But when you do that, the problem you run into is that now you have to, if you want to make a decision, go to Iran and say, this is a decision I'm making. Go to Turkey, say, this is a decision I'm making. Go to Russia, say, this is a decision I'm making. And in that process, these guys already have a idea of what their foreign policy is. And they already know what their end goal is, and you don't. Your Congress changes every 2 years. Your administration changes every 4 years. So when you don't have a long-range projection, and the only projection you had for the region under the current administration was, how fast can I cut and run out of the region? Now you guys, you're stuck. You cannot get back in there and be able to say that I have credibility and you have to listen to me. When America first went into the Middle East, when we first went into Iraq, you had credibility. Right now, you're at a stage where even your citizens are afraid of showing their passports, are embarrassed about showing their passports, possibly, not just in the region, other places. That is a direct failure of leadership. What's happening in Syria is literally tied to what I just explained in the process. The other pieces are, as far as various different groups fighting to be the lead of Islam. In this case, Saudi trying to be the lead of all the Sunni states, Turkey trying to establish its caliphate under Erdogan, Iran trying to represent all the Shia within the region, and Egypt trying to represent what we call possibly secular Arab states within the region. Well, when there's no one lead, like we have as an example in the Catholic religion, there's a pope, then there's nobody to speak on behalf of Islam. So you've taken already a complex political, geographic issue. You brought in all these outside players, to include Russia, strategic players like China. You've absolutely abandoned your allies, like you have turned your back on Israel, and you're wondering why Israel is now shifting its focus towards Russia, because it has no choice, because Russia is sitting on its border. You're wondering why your policy is not working in the region. And at the same time, you're telling the Christian Assyrians, you have to go and submit yourself to all these players that are killing each other in the region. So for a Christian Assyrian, you have two choices, either be under the Sunni Muslim Kurds or be under the Shia of Iran. Well, the Kurds and the Shia of Iran hate each other. Eventually, they're going to fight each other. Guess who's going to be killed in those front lines? It's going to be the Christians that are on the Kurdish side, and it's going to be the Christians that are under the Shia side. And that is not what you should do as an American Christian nation, especially when the root of Christianity is being eradicated in the region. Because at the end of the day, whether America likes it or not, if the Christian Assyrians are eradicated after 6,000 years of history, U.S. will be blamed for it. Period.
Very eloquently stated. Wow. Okay. So it's complex, and it's, it's complex. I'm just going to leave it at that. Lieutenant Colonel, I'm going to actually turn this over to you and allow you, again, this is a worldwide broadcast. We got people listening all over the world at the moment, and really wanting to understand the current situation as you're explaining it. So I'm going to let you bring on those people, the commander downrange, or the other gentleman, however you want to do this. I'm going to turn it over to you, and I'm going to stop you at the top of the hour, because I do think what you've got to say is not, it doesn't require us to butt in here, you know, except to manage a few things. But please take your liberties, bring on your commander, and tell the people what's really going on you know, with the situation. It just, folks, it just blows my mind. I mean, it really. Go ahead, Lieutenant Colonel.
It's a difficult subject, but we've been dealing with it for thousands of years. And I'm going to put the commander on. He's going to explain a little bit more on the tactical side, what is happening in Syria currently, so you guys are at least up to speed on it. And then I'll let him discuss the other items with the forces. So here's the
commander. Is the commander safe, by the way? I mean, he's okay, right?
He's okay. All right. He's okay all currently, right. Yes.
Okay. Go ahead, Commander.
That's serious.
Actually, the problem is what's going on with the policy that the decision maker they are watching to the big groups, political groups, and they don't watch to the minorities. For the same reasons, in 40s and 50s, we lose the Jewish people. They've been apart from the Iraqi community and Syria community and Lebanon community, totally the part of the Middle East community. For the same reasons of radical Arabization and radical of the religion. What, and for now, all the let me say in this way, the U.S. government, they are support all the Muslims around the world. But they don't. They forget to support the minorities. They who suffered, and the Yazidis, like Yazidis too, who suffered from the major and big politics, group politics in Iraq, like Shia, like Sunni, like even like Kurds. So this is the situation. Here it's our last fight, our last battle to stay in our country. We don't want to be refugees. We don't want to immigrate to any other country. We want to stay in our historical land. Our father, our grandfather, they built that countries. We have been for thousand years there. But unfortunately, with these steps of the politician and politics make us minorities, and now we are fighting for the last breath of the Christianity in the Middle East. Yeah.
And so what you're saying is that the just like here in America, we see these huge organizations and the money they pour in to lobby to Congress to change laws and to look after these people. Meanwhile, the minorities of these issues are hurt. For instance, the transgender bathroom issues we have here in America, we have a very small percentage of the people, 2-3%, lobbying to get the bathrooms, labels on the bathrooms changed so, you know, men can use women's bathrooms and vice versa. And they're getting away with it even though they're making victims out of everyday citizens. So what you're saying is over there you're seeing the same thing. You're seeing big government and you're seeing these lobby groups lobby, and it's at the sake of these minority Christian and other groups.
But the outcome is not who gets to use what bathroom. The outcome is real refugees, homeless, bombing, you know, real victims.
It's not about
flesh,
the people.
Real blood, real children.
It's about the money, apparently.
Yeah.
In reality, that what we are facing is really a genocide about the minorities in Iraq and Syria and all the Middle East. What we are facing that we've been targeting, organized targeting since 2003 until now. But the U.S. government, they don't support the minorities or especially the Christian for one reason. They don't want to make the Muslim countries angry that they will say to them, you support the Christians in the Middle East and you don't support the Muslims. This is not the solve or the fix of the problem. You must with the principles that have in American people, they must save the minorities. When they make the change in 2003, they have moral commitment to help the minorities. Now, what we are facing. We establish our small group, our army to fight without support of the government, and we can be a number in that situation if we have the support, if we have the money to make our numbers grow up and to fight for our land. So here the U.S. policy, United States policy, and State Department, they put us, like Lieutenant Colonel Sangeri say, put us in the middle of the clash between the two groups. You know about the situation that Shia are, let me say in this way, Arab are against the Kurds, and Kurds they have the problems with Arabs. Now, when we hear from the State Department, you must go and be part from Kurds or from Arabs. That means you must be a part from the problem. You will not be a part to solve or to solution the problem. We call for the safe haven. They rejected that safe haven. We call for establish an area in with international protection. They rejected that. They refused to be that area with international protection. So in everything, they push us in a small corner, and we don't know what will be the end. And really, if this happen, that will be the end of the Christianity in Iraq, like that happened in 50s for an end of 40s and 50s in Iraq for the Jewish people. Yeah.
Lieutenant Colonel, go ahead. Well, okay. So, just so I'm clear on this, and I think everyone needs to be very clear. What as Lieutenant Colonel and Commander, either one, correct me if I'm wrong. What we're seeing here, or what you've done, is you've established the Assyrian Christian Army. You have really done it off the sweat of your own brow. You've assembled your hardware. You've made the sacrifice, and you're really the only. And I don't only beacon of light and hope in the whole region. Yeah, I mean, you're a formidable force right now, and the only one that's really addressing the problem and protecting the Christians and the interests of the Christians all across that area. Is that a correct statement, sir?
That's a correct statement. People may not like it, but that's a correct statement. Look, today when you came into your office, that entire office that you're in, your studio, you had to use a small key to get into it. The Assyrian army, the Assyrian Christians, are the key to peace. if you want to have peace in the region, period. No one else can bring peace to that region. They may not like it, but they can't. We've given them enough chances. The problem is you have to get Congress to understand that. I'll give you as an example, as the commander was saying, and let me know if we're short on time, the Congressional Resolution 75, which was passed unanimously by Congress, recognizing the genocide of the Middle East. First of all, it was a non-binding resolution. Literally, for Assyrians on the ground, it equates to toilet paper. It may be a mental satisfaction for the people in Congress and the staffers who worked very hard to put it together, but it means nothing to us. So much lobby money went into trying to put that particular piece together. You know, prior to that, we were asked from the Near East to give our recommendations to that congressional resolution. Well, here's some of the things we looked at. The fact that since 2014, ISIS targeted Assyrian history and to erase the Assyrian history, not just the Christian history, but the Assyrian history off of the Middle East. That included 3,000-year-old winged bull statues that were destroyed for the Assyrian city of Nimrud. These are all in your Bible, built in the 13th century by the kings, of Assyria. And, going back to the 11th century, the 2,000-year-old historical sites of Hatra, which was destroyed, the capital city walls of Nineveh, to include the gates of Nineveh, which were destroyed, the Assyrian city of Khoshabad, the destruction of the museum of Mosul that contained priceless Assyrian artifacts. A week before the destruction of that area, 35 Assyrian villages of Khabur were basically cleansed out, driving 3,000 Assyrians away from there. Not to include the fact that 6 months prior to that, 200,000 Assyrians were basically pushed out of their homes out of Assyrian Nineveh Plain when they were supposed to be protected by the Kurdish in the region, who were the only ones we were providing weapons to, and the Shia. The Shia loaded up on two C-130s in the middle of the night, flew back to Baghdad on the request of the Iranians to consolidate their power. And the Kurds basically pulled out, prior to that, disarming the Christians from their own villages and leaving in the middle of the dark. So the Assyrians who left commissionally, they didn't just leave from a shack and go into the streets. They left $500,000 homes and went and became refugees. All these things happening, and what do the Assyrians get? Assyrians are told you have to work with either the Kurdish powers or the Kurdish regional government in Syria or in Iraq. Well, the YPG were the same ones who announced a declaration to establish their own state in the same area that these Assyrian villages were existing. So the Assyrians only had 38 villages, and the Assyrians get kicked out, pushed out from there. And the U.S. supports of YPG claims that in the future, if they want to take those villages for themselves, they're welcome to it, as long as it's a democratic process, as we say, by which that the people of Syria maybe decide that that area belongs to them.
Mr. Sangari, hold that thought, please. We are up against the top of the hour break. Fascinating stuff. Got a number of questions, not only from myself, but from the audience. When we come back, folks, you're listening to Lieutenant Colonel Sarges Sangari. We'll be right back after this. Stay with us.